I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver. This is thecommentary.ca. There's a fascinating, stimulating book out now that will, I'm sure, begin a necessary debate in this country and beyond. Its author, the journalist, political commentator, and activist Tariq Fatah joins me now. He is the founder of the Muslim Canadian Congress. His new book is The Jew Is Not My Enemy, Unveiling the Myths That Fuel Muslim Anti-Semitism. In some quarters, it's perhaps incendiary, and we have the great chance to talk to Mr. Fatah about this book and how he views the problems that fuel anti-Semitism in both Islamic and Jewish quarters. Its research is staggering. The author looks at the anti-Jewish writings of the Hadith literature as well as other interpretations of the Quran, which perhaps fuel a view of the Jews. Tariq Fatah's previous book, Chasing a Mirage, The Tragic Illusion of an Islamic State, was shortlisted for the Donner Prize. He is a regular contributor to Toronto's News Talk 1010 Radio. The Jew Is Not My Enemy is published by McClelland and Stewart. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Tariq Fatah. Good morning, Mr. Fatah.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, let's talk about something that's in current events before we get to the book. The election of Naheed Nenshi in Calgary as its mayor. What do you think that means to not only Calgary, but to Canada?
Well, first of all, it debunks the notion that there is widespread Islamophobia in Canada. That's the victimhood mentality that has been spread by many of the mosque clerics in this country who have made an industry out of it by suggesting that Muslims are being victimized because of their beliefs. Had that been the case, Naheed Nenshi would not have been able to win such a resounding victory, and that too in Alberta and Calgary, which is always a place that is always depicted as, less than appealing or less than tolerant of Muslims or people of visible minorities.
That's something you talk about in this book. I guess the impact of Muslim clerics in this, not only in this country but beyond, but I'm interested in Canada because we're in Canada.
Yes.
What is their influence on the larger community?
Well, first of all, Muslims who wear their religion on their sleeves, literally, or on their heads, or cover their faces, or dress up in medieval clothes, are the ones that non-Muslims see as quote-unquote authentic Muslims. The rest of us, the 90% of the Muslim community, that is not associated with any religious organization or any organized mosque, go about our lives like you or anyone else. So the ones who have integrated and assimilated in society are the ones that nobody notices, and that's the success story. However, I would suggest that almost 90% of the mosque establishment is rooted and connected to one or different forms or links to the Muslim Brotherhood. Many of them are funded by Saudi sources. Some organizations are based in the United States. They get funding from various Gulf Arab states. So there is an ideological war going on within the Muslim community here as well as the rest of the Muslim world, to which the rest of the non-Muslim world is quite puzzled and doesn't even know how to address the issue.
Now, when you talk about sort of those that are perhaps most vocal, you say you pulled out a figure there earlier just a second ago, but 90%. So it's only a minority that's the most vocal, that's the most radical.
If you count the number of mosques in this country,
yeah.
For example, in Toronto, we've got about 400,000 Muslims living over here. There are no more than 50 mosques. Even on Good Friday, which is a day that everyone, there's no obstacle to going to the mosque for the congregation. Even if you fill all the mosques to capacity, that would be about 50,000 people. Well, that keeps about 350,000 people who, given a chance to go for the Friday congregations, opted out and instead went to a ball game. So the point being that we are being held hostage by a clerical community, almost the same way as Quebec was once held hostage by in the Duplessis era, whereby the voices of ordinary Muslims, the people like Nahid Nenshi, or Senator Jaffer, Mubina Jaffer, or Senator Mac Herb from Ottawa, all these are Muslims who are part and parcel of our society. You know, the Secretary General of the Trade Union, the Canadian Labour Congress is a Muslim. The President of Rogers Communication is a Muslim. Nobody recognizes these people as the voice of Muslims. Somehow, if you have to dress up in a bizarre medieval fashion, those guys then get recognized by the Prime Minister or the Leader of the Opposition, and therefore we never get to really understand what the real community feels like. However, in the case of anti-Semitism, I would suggest that almost all Muslims are subject to the education that leaves us suspect, at the best suspicious of Jews as people that should not be trusted. And that's why I've written the book, to expose the mythologies and the legends and bring forth the truth that there is no substance in Islam to base any hatred against the Jewish community.
So, you talked about what's being taught, but in terms of, like, I mean, one can be taught things in childhood and quickly forget them in life. Like, I was raised a Catholic, but I'm not a practicing Catholic. But in terms of the denunciation of anti-Semitism, that's something that we don't hear very much from Muslims, whether they're radical or not. Why is that?
They'll first have to admit that there is anti-Semitism. You can't denounce anti-Semitism when you claim that it doesn't exist. I mean, and it is so ubiquitous. You pick up any sermon anywhere in the Muslim world, in a mosque, and you will always have, before they go to the Friday congregation, the prayer that, oh God, defeat the kuffar and bring victory to the Muslims. And the word kuffar identifies Jews and Christians. But it's always denied. It is being said in Canada. And these are charitable institutions that have charitable status that are tax-funded that spread hatred against the Jews and Christians. So the part of the community is blinded, and many others associate themselves purely out of community patriotism. They do not want to disown their own team, you know.
Yeah.
So they deny that it exists, but, you know, I can't be fooled about it. I was born a Muslim, I am a Muslim, and I know that there is a divergence between what the Quran teaches Muslims and what the Hadith literature, which was written 200 years after the death of Prophet Muhammad, and primary among that legend is a story that Muslims claim with bravado that Prophet Muhammad slaughtered 900 Jewish men. Now, it's not the Jews who are saying that. This is Muslims claiming with bravado that, yes, our leader slaughtered 900 of you guys. And there's no physical evidence of that. There is no Jewish writings that say that in the year 632 or 634 that this incident took place. Then the mosque where this happened still exists. I visited that place. There is no evidence of human remains over there. And so we cling to a legend that depicts our own prophet as a mass murderer, yet we don't get upset at that. But if someone draws a cartoon in Denmark, we go nuts.
So why does this misinformation continue then? I mean, reading the book, I've been telling people, while reading the book, you feel a lot smarter because you've obviously done a lot of research, reading scripture and the sort. How does it get misinterpreted?
Most Muslims never read the Quran. 80% of Muslims don't read Arabic or even understand it. That keeps out a vast number of people out of the faith, actual teachings, and allows them to be hostage of the cleric who can pretend that he speaks Arabic. And this is a tragedy that became more complicated in the early 20th century with the rise of fascism in Europe and the contacts between the Nazis and the Grand Mufti of Palestine and the Muslim Brotherhood. And after the Second World War, many Nazis took refuge in Egypt. And I have information, even Saudi Arabia and Jordan, they converted to Islam and brought their hatred of the Jew within the mainstream Muslim thinking. And now they say that it is, we are not anti-Jewish, we are anti-Israel, but that doesn't withstand scrutiny, because as I produce evidence in the book that many of the clerics are saying, even if Israel was destroyed, even if it was never created, we would still hate the Jew, because our holy books say that they are sons of dogs and swines and pigs, and a very hateful language is there that is permitted to be taught.
Now, let's move on to the idea of Israel. You also, I mean, the book isn't necessarily criticizing Islam. It also looks very critically at the role that Israel plays in sort of fueling the anti-Semitism.
Well, my point is that the state of Israel as a Jewish state, mm-hmm. Is a legal entity. It's been authorized by a two-thirds vote in the United Nations General Assembly. It has the backing and legality and recognition of Egypt and Jordan and the Palestinian Authority. That matter should end. However, it does not. Today, Iran and many of the Islamo-fascist groups are still calling for the eradication of Israel from the map of Earth. That is the absolute nonsense. And the starting point of a conversation about the Palestinian dispute should be that it is a political dispute, it is a legal dispute, it is not a religious dispute. If it was religious, then the Quran is very explicit in saying that the Jews deserve and have the right to live in the Holy Land. I mean, in the Quran, God tells Moses, tell your people not to vacate the Holy Land. And it is as explicit as that. But we've turned the Israel-Palestine dispute into a source of anti-Semitism. My point being that Israel should facilitate the creation of a Palestinian state. I am not saying that as soon as the state is created, as soon as Palestine is an independent country, anti-Semitism will end. No, not at all. However, what will happen is that the oxygen that feeds anti-Semitism from that dispute will be cut off. And our job, those of us who are fighting anti-Semitism as a Muslim duty, our job will become easy.
And do you think it'll end anti-Semitism very soon thereafter?
No, not till we become industrial democratic societies. Because these beliefs steeped in mythology and magic and superstition are part and parcel of any agrarian feudal society, whether it was 12th century Europe or 21st century Arabia and Africa, our rational and reasoned development in the West is because we went through the Industrial Revolution, because we had thinkers like Rousseau and Voltaire, Karl Marx, John Adams, you know, people, statesmen, politicians, and intelligentsia have created the notion that all human beings are equal, that the individual is supreme, that the rights of the collective cannot crush the individual. However, we recognize collective responsibility as law-abiding citizens bound by a constitution. That is all quite foreign to any country that in the 16th or 17th century, or those developing countries that live in the 12th century in the state of mind. So our task is very difficult, but somebody's got to take the first step.
What I find interesting in your book that you do is you use your own story to illustrate sort of the degree of anti-Semitism that we see. You grew up in Pakistan, did you?
Yes, I did. I was born in Karachi.
Yeah.
And I lived there for 29 years of my life till 1978.
You growing up, you didn't experience or see much anti-Semitism, did you?
Not at all. I went to a Catholic school, and I had classmates who were Jewish. I can't even remember anti-Semitism or being looked at in a negative sense. And I mentioned in my book a movie that was made in the mid-60s. The title was, roughly translated, The Daughter of a Jew, where this Jewish woman was the heroine. And that movie was the number one hit of the year. Today, it can't be produced. No one would attend such a movie. And my point being that Israel had already been created. It had already fought two wars in 1948 and 1956, yet in my country, Pakistan, which has a distinct Indian Islamic culture, the Jew was not a four-letter word. Today, when I visited in 2006, I could not meet anyone who didn't believe that 9/11 was of the work of Israel and the Jewish lobby.
Is there someone we can blame? I mean, is it Ahmadinejad in terms of fomenting this view of the Jews and fueling this anti-Semitism? Is there a certain group, a person perhaps, that we can blame?
My answer will not please many people who listen, but this is a direct result of the United States of America feeding anti-Semitism during the fight in the Cold War. Because at that time, the propaganda being fed by the jihadis was that communism was a Jewish conspiracy. And we spent billions fermenting anti-communist hysteria by saying Karl Marx, Lenin, Trotsky, everyone was a Jew, and therefore the protocols of the Elders of Zion, all of this was part of a communist Bolshevik conspiracy, and so the Jews want to control the world, and that has been deeply embedded in Muslim society by the Muslim countries that were allied to the United States of America. So the blame has to be shared right across. I remember in school I was told that communism was work of Jews, and I think I was maybe 6 or 7 years old. Nothing meant anything, but I still remember people saying that Lenin was a Jew and Marx was a Jew, and it didn't mean anything to us, but I'm telling you that it has a residual effect. And after the end of the Cold War, the baton has been passed over to the Muslim Brotherhood, who were the allies of the Americans throughout the Cold War, to spread this even more. And now they have come to the United States. Every major urban school in Canada and the United States has Muslim Brotherhood youth groups. There are a number of Islamic organizations listed by the U.S. Justice Department as co-conspirators in a Texas terror trial, who operate freely, who openly say on their websites that they belong and are associated with the Muslim Brotherhood's founder, Hassan al-Banna. So we have not yet in the West figured out how to combat this hatred. And since we do not understand it, we rather fight malaria by killing mosquitoes rather than draining the swamp.
Well, what do you think the political parties in Canada have to do in terms of this debate?
Well, they should show some courage and stand up and show some spine. If it was their daughters being subjected to second-class status, I doubt if Mr. Ignatieff or Jack Layton would even dare to suggest that they should show respect to a culture that indulges in female genital mutilation, that encases women in a mobile prison. We have developed a society where we are more concerned how the Afghan army treats the Taliban rather than how the Taliban kill Canadian soldiers. So I think we are living in an era of political mediocrity where we do not have the statesmen that we once had, neither Tommy Douglas nor Diefenbaker nor, you know, so many great people that have gone by who would be able to speak on the merits of an argument rather than the politics of it.
Your wife had warned you as you were writing this book that you'd antagonize both Jews and Muslims. Do you think you've done that?
I would hope not, but I am not looking for brownie points. I'm I'm critical of Israel for what it has done. I'm primarily blaming the Muslims for being illiterate about their own faith. So, you know, I'm 61. I'm semi-retired. I'm not looking for a promotion elsewhere, but I can live with the flack that I get. Initially, I had backed off from writing this book. I mean, she said, you're neither Arab nor Jew. What's it to you? But then I realized that it was not Arabs who were killing Jews. It was Pakistanis, and the suicide bombers in London were not Arabs. The Toronto 18 were not Arab. This problem is coming from Pakistan. This hatred is coming from the place that I was born. So it's my duty to do my part in spreading the truth or making people wake up, or at the least of all, triggering a debate and asking people to say if they feel I'm wrong, they should come and talk or write about it and say, well, Tariq Fateh was wrong. So tell me what the truth is then.
This is a good book, Tariq. I appreciate your time today. Congratulations on it. Continued good luck with the book.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. The book is called The Jew Is Not My Enemy, Unveiling the Myths That Fuel Muslim Anti-Semitism. It's published by McClelland & Stewart. Its author, Tariq Fateh, on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.